Shared this last week during our pastoral moment where I was going with tonight's message. So it's no great shock that we'll end up in Exodus 12. And what we're going to look at tonight is something that is extremely, gosh, I'm losing water bottles. This couldn't have gone worse. Ernie, will you grab that for me, brother? And scene. All right. We're going to go to Exodus 12, and we're going to look at two concepts tonight. We're going to look at the sacrificial lamb and its preparation, but the two concepts are really simple. We're going to look at the first, and we're going to look at the final. So as we walk through that, we're going to go back to Exodus 12, and I want us to look at what God said to Moses to share with a people who, as this is being read, they're still enslaved to Egypt, and they're about to do something, because after hundreds of years of being in slavery, they're now going to be shifted into a completely different place. So I'll read this for us now. Exodus 12 starts in verse 1. We'll go through 6. And it says, "And the Lord said to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, 'This month shall be for you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year for you. Tell all the congregation of Israel that on the 10th day of the month, every man shall take a lamb according to their father's houses, a lamb for a household. And if the household is too small for a lamb, then he and his nearest neighbor shall take according to the number of persons. According to what each can eat, you shall make your count for the lamb. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male a year old. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats. And you shall keep it with you until the 14th day of this month, when the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill their lambs at twilight.'" And then verse 46 continues, it has one final instruction. "It shall be eaten in one home. You shall not take any of the flesh outside the house, and you shall not break any of its bones." So as we break this down, all we really can do tonight is I had to pick 5 because, I mean, a month's worth of sermons could be preached just around this concept. And so we're going to break them down here and just look at 5 of these statements. First of which, it says, "Every man shall take a lamb according to their father's houses, a lamb for a household." If you take this comment in connection with what verse 4 tells us, what it's stressing into here is this idea that families were going to partake together. So if your family wasn't big enough to consume an entire lamb, what you did was you kind of buddied up with your neighbor. And what it's stressing is that no matter what happens, the lamb, the sacrifice, is not to be wasted. The sacrifice was precious. The flesh meant something, and it wasn't just going to be thrown away. Hey, we cooked a lamb, and so we didn't need it all. Let's just pitch the rest of it. That was unacceptable for this particular meal, which God was specifying to Moses and to Aaron. Joseph Hertz was the chief rabbi of the United Kingdom in the early 1900s. He had this quote: "Had a family of 2 or 3 been compelled to take a whole lamb, a considerable quantity would have been wasted." Now, the other thing you're going to hear over and over again today is that everything that gets done within the Passover has an individual family context. They're doing something within the household that's important and has to be done a certain way, but it's also being done all at the same time. So it's both communal as well as individual, and it's a beautiful foreshadowing of the individual as well as tribal understanding of the body of Christ. The very next thing that we're told is this. We're told that the lamb should be without blemish. Okay, God demanded sacrifice of his people, and that command was designed to show them that only their best possessions, only their most desirable things would suffice for this specific activity. When you're reading about something that is as inherently Jewish as the Passover, it makes sense to go back and to read Jewish writers. So Dennis Prager has an amazing commentary on the Exodus. This is what he had to say. "All the animals sacrificed to God had to be perfect. People were not allowed to sacrifice their least desirable animals because then it would not be a sacrifice. The next thing we hear is you should keep it with you until the 14th day of this month." Lambs were selected on the 10th day. They then were there until the 14th day when the slaughter occurred. There is 4 days where this lamb is with them. Now, most of us aren't as involved in the production of our food as the Israelites were, okay? Just because you have a chicken coop in your backyard, it doesn't mean that you source all your own food, okay? And so for them, there's a very, very conscious understanding of what is walking around their living room. These are slaves. They are underfed. When they are fed in these massive meat pots. Okay, it's something that actually gets referenced in Exodus. They're wandering around the desert. They don't have food. This is when they're complaining for just one of the times to God. And they're sitting there and they're like, hey, oh, that we long for the meat pots of Egypt, because that's how they were fed. So here's the context for this. They are sitting there and they are watching a meal walk around their living room that was not just a normal meal. A roasted lamb would have been a top tier dish for them. And there's this kind of essence of like, it came in on the 10th day and their hungry, underfed slave bellies are longing to have a meal like this, but there's a delayed gratification. One of the things that's so cool, because this carries on to today. If you ever go to a Passover Seder dinner, don't come hungry, because the way that they function is like this. You show up, and then what happens is an entire half of the book of prayers is read right then and there. So an entire book of prayers is read, and then the Exodus account is read and discussed. So if you show up hungry, you are at a minimum 90 to 120 minutes away from your first bite, because you're just going to sit there and just kind of go through all of this. There's a delayed gratification that carries on today, even into the Passover Seder recognition. The other thing that happens, because there's a delayed gratification of the fact that an amazing thing is on the way, but there's something else. I don't know if any of you have ever seen a baby lamb, okay? They're not ugly. They look like this, okay? Yeah, keep that up for a second. Yeah, just you guys can see where I'm going, right? This shows up at your house. It is an unblemished, perfect lamb. It shows up. Everybody's heard a sermon on how stupid they are, right? Sheep are super dumb, and so this thing just kind of wanders around. It sleeps with the kids. It's laying around. It's hanging out for 4 days. This is in your house. It's being kind. It's sweet. They're harmless. And here's what the Lord wanted them to understand. It's not free, guys. Sacrifice is relational. They fell in love with this stupid thing, and then they had to cut its throat in order to spill blood that was required on their behalf. The whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill their lambs at twilight. Again, it is happening individually for the family, but it is happening communally. Each family had a lamb that was committed to slaughter to obtain the blood, but the whole congregation slaughtered it. The sound of death on that evening would have been a horrifying thing to witness. They're pretty dumb, but they're not quiet. Lambs are extremely loud animals. And as they were sitting there, the sound of their dying bodies would have been overwhelming. Because remember, Israel at this time is over 600,000 in size, and that's just the men. So if you do the math on the families, they kind of have spun it out so that when you go all the way to the kingdom of David where they're sitting there, and in that time frame, they estimate over 250,000 lambs would have been brought in and slaughtered on that Day of Atonement. So you're just sitting back and you're going, this is an unbelievable sound. Here's a really interesting detail that I found this week. To the Egyptians, their oppressors, lambs were gods. They revered them and they worshiped them, which meant they were untouched. Watch this. The last thing that Israel does before they're set free, their first steps to freedom were to stand in front of their oppressors and have a mass slaughter of their gods before their very eyes. The sound of those horrifying little lambs dying would have been ringing with fear to the Egyptians who are sitting there going, I can't believe what I'm seeing right now. And to free them from hundreds of years of Egyptian culture that they had been oppressed by, they are now slaughtering the gods of their oppressors before their very eyes. It was their first step to freedom. The last detail, and I put some emphasis on it when I read it, is in verse 46, where it says, you shall not break any of its bones. If you were in Israel at the time, you're like, what does that matter? Why in the world do you care if any of its bones are broken? We're going for the flesh. We're not worried about the bones. But it was done in a specific way. The lamb was not to be wasted, nor were any of its bones to be broken in any way as it was prepared. Those are the details of the first sacrificial lamb. Let's look at the fulfillment of the final. It says, every man shall take a lamb according to his father's house. If you look at Christ, he fulfilled every genealogy. He came from the house of David, came from the house of Israel. He fulfilled the Christ line. He continued to actually fulfill every prophetic checkmark along the way, the law and the prophets, everything that he had to be, he was. He came from the house that he needed to, and that lamb was prepared for that day. The lamb shall be without blemish. One of the things that's so incredible is the fact that Jesus, over and over and over again, he is scrutinized constantly by the Pharisees. They continue to question, they continue to question, they continue to question. All throughout the Gospels, what happens? They could find no fault. They could find no fault. He made them angry, but he wasn't wrong. He wasn't sinful in any way. And then by the time we get all the way down to his final days in Jerusalem, what happens? He gets arrested. They find no fault. It actually took them paying Judas off. It took injustice to get Christ to the cross. It wasn't because he was guilty. He stands before Pilate. He stands before Herod. What do both of them declare him? Guiltless. We find no guilt in him. He was without blemish, both in practice and in life, as well as in the final legal declaration that would actually free him. But then what happens? Comes down, the ultimate slap in the face. This is one of my favorite details. When they call for Barabbas, by the way, those same voices that were sitting there, that were crying for his worship on Palm Sunday, which we just talked about, are now crying for his crucifixion. When they call for Barabbas, do you know what they free Barabbas of? Insurrection. But he was an insurrectionist. It meant he was causing an uprising within Rome, the very thing that they ended up taking Jesus into captivity for. It is the ultimate lack of justice, the injustice upon injustice, that he comes in, a free man, a guiltless man, to come in and to be declared that he was guilty. He was found without blemish. It says that you shall keep it until the 14th day of the month. I want you to think about that relational point that we made. That lamb was being scrutinized for 4 days. Cool detail, Ryan and I just sat in. We have some unbelievable volunteer Bible teachers here. Kathy Wilson's one of them. She knows more about all this stuff than I'll know in a lifetime. We sat there with Kathy and she was walking us through. You know what day Jesus rode into Jerusalem? It was the 10th day. You know what day he was killed? It's the 14th. The lamb rode in. And for those 4 days, what happened to him? Just like the lambs in Egypt, he was scrutinized for 4 days by every single person you can imagine. But the relational piece is huge. Because to God the Father, not just to those who were close to him, to God the Father, this was so much more than relational. This lamb was precious beyond measure. The whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill their lambs at twilight. All three of the synoptic gospels record the exact same detail. It says that on the day that Jesus was killed, right at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it went dark. It went to twilight. And in the darkness, a cry is heard from the lamb being slaughtered. Just like all those lambs so many years ago in the first Passover. Just like the lambs that were the gods for Egypt. A god died a death that day on Golgotha. Except the fear that it would eventually strike was not in Egyptians. It was in the minds of the demonic oppressors who now all of a sudden stopped looking at the lamb as the lamb and see him now as a warring conqueror over sin and death. The sound of slaughter that day wasn't coming from the little lambs. It was Jesus' cries that shattered that twilight night. It was the very first sounds of our freedom being wrung out as we looked at him, both as lamb and as king. It says, you shall not break any of his bones. Just like the Passover lamb, Jesus was not to have any of his bones broken that day. The thing that is so incredibly, I mean, you couldn't plan it, you couldn't scope it. Everybody who was crucified, it was so routine, they broke their legs. And here's why. This is Merrill Tenney. The soldiers broke the legs of the living victims to hasten death. The only way a crucified man could obtain a full breath of air was to raise himself up by means of his legs to ease the tension on his arms and his chest muscles. If the legs were broken, he could not possibly do so, and death would follow shortly because of a lack of oxygen. There's a detail in the scriptures that's so incredible. It says that Jesus is doing all of these things. You just heard it echoed during the worship. It's after it is the sponge is raised on the hyssop branch. He takes it and then he declares what? It is finished. And then it says something in the Gospels. It says that he surrendered his spirit. It's almost as if Jesus, I mean, we read this over and over again. Every single thing that Jesus did on our behalf that day, he submitted to. He allowed to happen. Because all the power in heaven and earth had already been given to him. So he's allowing it to happen for you, for me. And it's almost as if even at the very end, Jesus goes, you guys aren't actually killing me. I will be done when I say I'm done. I will be done when it is all finished. Every dot and every tittle of the law and the prophets had to be completed. And what's so great is that one of the very final things that has to happen, they couldn't even have known was going to occur. Because when Jesus says it's finished and he surrenders his spirit, he dies. And those Roman soldiers could not have known that when they go to check him and they pierce his side and blood and water flow because all of the fluids have settled in and gravity's now pulling them out because there's no pumping heart. They had no idea that when they pulled him off the cross without shattering his legs that day, that even after his death, he's fulfilling the final scriptural pieces. They could never have known that, but it happened. And it happened because the Lamb came to die a death that we didn't have to in our place. Do you see what he was? Do you see that only the God-man of Jesus, the Christ, could have fulfilled all the things that he had to be? You got to see that through Christ alone, through faith alone, we could be brought back into right relationship. He was everything that that lamb had to be. He was as the first so that he could be the final.